Well, next time, a year or two, I'll cuddle up with a good book. And one good book that you might want to cuddle up with is a new one called Village of the Ghost Bears. It's the fourth in a series of Nathan Active novels. And on the phone with me now is Stan Jones, who's an author and a bush pilot at times. Stan, thank you much for being on the air with me.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
This is the fourth novel in the Nathan Active series. Could you tell me a little bit about Nathan Active and what kind of person he is?
Sure. Nathan Active is an Alaska State Trooper based in the village of Chukchi, which is just below the Arctic Circle. It's modeled on Kotzebue, and Kotzebue is just around the Arctic Circle. Nathan is a full Inupiat Eskimo by birth, but he was adopted out of the village as a baby because his mother was young and not up to raising a child, and raised in Anchorage by white schoolteacher parents, the parents who adopted him while they were working in the village. So he has spent his entire life there, been raised there, likes Anchorage, has kind of rejected his heritage, does not want to have anything to do with Chukchi or his roots there. But he is a guy who was born with the cop gene, you might want to say, just wanted to be a policeman. So he applied for work with the state troopers and got a job and went to the Trooper Academy in Southeast Alaska. And then he got his first assignment, and out of sheer bureaucratic perversity, was sent straight to Chukchi, which is, of course, a fertile source of dramatic conflict for the poor guy. So in Chukchi, he has not only to learn how to be an Alaska State Trooper investigator, but also, kind of unwillingly and reluctantly at first, has to get back in touch with his roots, and that is basically what the series is about.
What made you come up with the Nathan Active character in the first place?
Well, I lived in Kotzebue for quite a number of years and still really like the place. I go back and visit once or twice a year, as often as I can manage at any rate. And after I'd lived there for a while, I thought I'd like to write stories about it. And at first I couldn't figure out what kind of stories. And then I thought of writing detective stories because detectives travel around a lot and find out a lot of things and meet all kinds of different people. And, of course, deal with dramatic events. And if you're going to write stories for people to read, drama is always a good thing. The question was exactly who would the cop be? And it didn't make any sense to think of writing stories about a village cop if the cop was just going to be, another white guy. So I thought probably he would have to be a native with some ties to the community. But although I had lived in Kotzebue for a while and was in fact born in Anchorage, I'm not an Alaska native, ethnically speaking, and I didn't really think I could put myself inside the head of someone who'd been raised in a village all their lives. So I knew that I couldn't make the cop someone who'd spent all of his life in a village. And that was the start of coming up with the idea of a village-born kid who had, in fact, been raised elsewhere. Because then, when he did go back to Chukchi, he would be a kind of an insider and an outsider at the same time. And that was very useful dramatically, because one of the things I like to do in these stories is to let the reader get acquainted with Northwest Alaska and how different it is from the places they live in the lower 48. And if your cop was going to be someone who had lived in the village all his life, then he wouldn't notice the things that are different about it from the rest of the country. On the other hand, if he was somebody who was raised in Anchorage and had not really been to the village since he was a baby, well, then he would notice the same things that anybody else would notice when they first go to rural Alaska from another part of the world. You know, everybody rides snow machine, much more reliance on hunting and fishing. Different language, different culture, the houses look different, the land looks different, all that. So having Nathan be someone who didn't live in Chukchi all his life made it possible for him to be, in addition to an investigator of interesting crimes, he can also be a kind of tour guide for readers from outside who haven't seen this part of the world and may never do so except through books.
And the theme in the character... The plot in this book is got Nathan Active looking for the person who started a fire in the rec center, and several people passed away in that fire. Could you elucidate a little bit more on the plot, please?
Yep. Well, that is the plot. Actually, there are two things that seem unrelated at first, and his puzzle is to figure out what's going on in both plots and whether they're related. One, as you say, is a terrible fire that erupts in the town's rec center in a way that most of the people in the rec center can't get out, and eight people die. And then the other thing is that Nathan and his girlfriend, the love of his life, a woman named Grace Palmer, find a dead hunter in a remote lake when they're camping out. And this is one of those northern lakes that's inhabited by pike, and enough of this fellow's been eaten away that there's just no good way to identify him, at least not right off. So they have two things running in parallel. One is figuring out who this dead hunter was, and was his death an accident? And the other is, how did this rec center fire get started? Why? Does appear to have been arson, possibly. So if so, why was it started, and was the arsonist after someone in particular? And if so, who among the eight fatalities was the target?
And we get a little bit of a surprise ending, but unlike a lot of detective novels, the surprise ending doesn't come right at the very end page of the book. It's about 20, 30 pages into the book, and then the last part of the book is them having further adventures in trying to escape from the killer's clutches.
Right, right. I guess that's what you would, in classic literature, they call an anticlimax, what happens after the climax, and, sort of clean up the loose ends and give the characters in the book a chance to have a little talk and explain what they make of it and reflect on it a little bit. So that's part of the purpose of the anticlimax. And then, of course, there's a couple of, as you may have noted, a thread or two left dangling about what is going to happen next, and that leads the way to things that will be covered in the next Nathan Active book.
And you were working on that at the present time.
Well, I have some notes and some ideas and a few thousand words written down. Yeah, it's far from finished, but I guess you could say it is begun.
Well, what is needed for you about writing Alaska-based crime novels?
I'm sorry, again?
What's pleasurable for you about writing an Alaska-based crime novels?
Well, writing in itself is pleasurable for me. Before I wrote novels, and actually while I started writing them, I was a newspaper reporter. Actually, I was also a public radio reporter at KOTZ in Kotzebue for a time. And then I was a newspaper reporter, so I've always been a word guy. This was a chance to be a different kind of word guy. And also, it gives me a chance to sort of revisit Northwest Alaska, even if it is an imaginary version of it, and tell stories about the people and the country up there and some of the other things I noticed when I lived there, or that I still hear about as I watch the news from Northwest Alaska, or just talk with people I know who still live up there, or even listen to KOTZ online, which you can do now.
I'm on the phone with Stan Jones, author of the recently released book, Village of the Ghost Bears. It's about, how many pages long is it?
I believe this one's around 300, 320, something like that.
And you're also the author of a different kind of writing, more about the Exxon Valdez oil spill.
That is true. I wrote that book in connection with my day job, which is at the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council, which is a nonprofit set up after the Exxon Valdez oil spill to try to make sure we don't ever have anything else like that. So what happened is, about 2 years ago, me and a co-author, Sharon Bushell of Homer, started on a project to do what is basically an oral history of the Exxon Valdez oil spill. And I want to give Sharon full credit here. We're listed as co-authors, but in fact, she did more of the work than I did. She lives in Homer. She's an experienced oral historian who's written a couple of oral history books called We Alaskans. And she interviewed around 90 people for this book, including Joe Hazelwood, the captain of the Exxon Valdez. And we used about 62 or 3 of the interviews in the book. And the part I wrote was the kind of introductory material and the connecting material between the interviews, setting the scene about the spill, relating the basic facts, and so on. And the result is a remarkably compelling document, and I say that unblushingly, and not because the parts that I wrote are compelling. They are the reasonably familiar factual history of the spill. What's compelling is these interviews that Sharon came up with and some of the things that people say in those interviews. I covered the oil spill as a reporter for the Anchorage Daily News, and I thought I knew the subject pretty well, but I learned a great deal just from hearing the accounts of these people who lived it.
Stan, tell me about Murderer's Row, please.
Murderer's Row is an annual event that I do with two other crime writers. Tom Brennan is one, and he writes true crime books about Alaska crime. Plus, he's recently written a novel called the Snowflake Rebellion. And then the other one is Mike Dugan, who is a state legislator who used to be a Daily News columnist here in Anchorage and also writes crime novels involving a detective named Nick Kane. So we get together once a year and have a book signing, and since there's three of us and we all write about murderers, we call it Murderer's Row.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, it is fun.
You're working on the next Nathan Active novel, and we're doing a day job, too. You must be like writing.
Well, I do. Basically, I do most of my writing on Sunday, and I don't know how long since I've had Sundays on any reliable basis, because, you know, I just sit down and write on Sundays. Those are my Sundays. So one way I think of a book is how long does it take to write one, and it takes about maybe 2 years of Sundays to write a Nathan Active story, although I'm going to try to write the next one a little bit faster. And, you know, that's my lot in life, to be a weekend novelist, I guess. If the books paid more, I'd probably quit my day job and try to live off the money, but so far that hasn't happened.
Tell me a little bit about the publisher.
The publisher is Soho Press of New York, and they're a general trade book publisher with books on a lot of subjects, but they have a one kind of department or imprint that's just for crime, and that's the part I work for. And they have published three of the Nathan Active books, and the other one, the one that actually came out just before this book, which was called Frozen Sun, I just couldn't get anybody to publish it, and I loved it, so I set up my own publishing company and published it myself.
All right. I've been talking to Stan Jones, author of the new novel, Village of the Ghost Bears. I checked online, and it is available through special order at Hearthside Books. Again, the publisher is Soho Press. Stan, thank you very much for being on the air with me.
Thanks. It was great talking to you.
An old cowpoke went riding out one dark and windy day. Upon a ridge he rested as he rode along his way, when all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw, plowing through the ragged skies and up a cloudy draw. Yippee-yi-yay, yippee-yi-ho. Their horns were black and shiny, and their hooves were made of steel. Their brands were still on fire, and their hot breath he could feel. A bolt of fear shot through him as they thundered through the sky. We saw the riders coming hard, and he heard their mournful cry. Yippee-yi-yay, yippee-yi-ho. Their faces gaunt, their eyes are blurred, their shirts all soaked with sweat. They're riding hard to catch that herd, but they ain't caught them yet, cause they've got to ride forever on that range up in the sky, on horses snorting fire, as they ride on, hear them cry. Yippee-yi-yay, yippee-yi-yo.